It's time to know your lane.
This guy doesn't even get weekends.
I don't care. We're not the same people. I need to refresh and recharge.
You need a bubble bath.
Like, I need a day off.
Candles lit.
Tomorrow,
bottle of wine.
Friday, I have no business being here.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the official voice of the Leafs.
Final hour, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN Go app, now on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles, McLennan, the O-Dog will be back momentarily. He'll be dragging Bob McKenzie with him in studio. Get Bobby Mack's take on the trade today between the Devils and the Ducks.
I think it's a good trade. Good. It's another hockey trade.
That's all I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Give me trades.
I don't want to get Leaf fans worked up about it, but I just... Whenever I see a player where, you could look at it and say, yeah, you could use that player. Like, to me, Vatanen would instantly, not that I don't think that the Leafs are trending in the right direction, but now all of a sudden that really would shore up your back end and maybe slot players down a little bit. Like, to me, Zaitsev could push down, and if you have, like, Riley and Vatanen and Gardner and Zaitsev, like, it would just push guys down a little bit.
Ron Hainsey, maybe less 5-on-5 minutes, but
exactly,
then you have,
like,
more penalty kill
minutes. It just, again, wish list, but then what would it have cost? Because Henrique's a really good player, and if they would have said, well, to Kadri, it's a non-starter at that point.
Yeah,
so
I don't think that's who it would be realistically. I think Anaheim would be realistic because Kadri also has like 4 years left on their deal. I don't know where Henrique's deal is at necessarily. But,
right.
And I like Henrique. He's a good player. I think Kadri's a better player. I think it would be more likely, you know, a guy like Connor Brown.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we'll take a guy like Connor Brown, you know, or Bozak maybe, but I don't think they're in a position where I would do that deal if it was Bozak and something else and picks for Vatanen.
Right.
But
it just, you start to look at it like what if, because you had to know, knowing Lou as a general manager, knowing the league and the pulse of it, if Vatanen was available, the Leafs would have made a pitch.
They were aware of it.
They would have at least said, what's it going to take from our roster or from our prospects and picks? And you either say no thank you or you get to a point where it just doesn't work. It's not a fit. Because if Anaheim was set on a centerman, to me the Leafs have an abundance of wingers. Even in the farm coming up.
And that's also the problem with the potential of moving a guy like Bozak.
Right.
Okay, you're still secure in your top six. You love Matthews, Kadri, 1-2.
Right.
But if one of them gets injured, what, Dominic Moore is going to move up to the top
you're
two
right.
line?
That's it could be just a non-starter if it was just it's Kadri or nothing. Looking at Henrique's contract, he's got one more year, and then he's a UFA.
Yeah, see, I think the Ducks are in a win-now mentality.
Right.
You know, I think they realize in the next year or two, we got to capitalize while Kessler is 32, Getzlaff and Perry are 32, 33.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, BX is up there. We got to do it now. That's why they brought in Carlisle, not to win 5 years down the road.
No, it's right now. And Vatanen's 26 years old and has this year and two more years. His cap hit is 3-3.
It's a great contract.
It's really nice. Like, so it's cost certainty on a guy who... You know, it was right in the wheelhouse. It was going to cost a lot. Henrique's a good player.
Do you think Kadri is the Henrique equivalent? I think that's too rich. I think Kadri's a better player.
I do too, but that's kind of what... I mean, when you're looking just at the Leafs roster, it would have taken more than... They wouldn't have wanted Bozak. It would have been Kadri. If they were looking for a centerman, Kadri scored 30 last year. He's on pace to score that or more right now. But... He's also that two-way player and plays in a lot of different roles. Henrique's a terrific player, too. I'm not taking anything away from him. But they must be looking at Getzlaff's situation right now. Vermette is there, hasn't really been lighting it on fire. Anaheim's struggling. They've got to dig out here a little bit. But it just didn't work, and I don't want to get Leaf fans worked up. But I was thinking in my mind, that's a trade, a hockey trade, that you had to have known that maybe Toronto was at least kicking the tires on it.
Well, it's a top four defenseman.
I think he's a top pairing guy, my personal opinion.
Okay, so you got him in the top pairing.
But at least the top four.
I think he's a really good puck-moving, skating defenseman. He's not the biggest guy in the world.
No, but he's
a good player.
He's kind of like a... I wouldn't compare him to a Brian Rafalski, but that type of player, which Lou is very familiar with.
Sure.
Lou is actually one of the general managers that helped kind of change the dynamic of small defensemen handling the puck. Rafalski was one of the, in the modern day, one of those guys.
Yeah, he was an outlier when he first came
exactly, out. Exactly, outlier is the word.
Well, yeah, I mean, listen, you know the way Leaf fans react. The it's almost as if any trade that happens, it should have happened here first.
Yeah, and that's
like,
why I didn't want
to. There aren't 30 other teams in the league.
I didn't want to work people up. It's no, just I sent you an OA text going, you had to at least know that the Leafs were in on
it. It's not working it up. I think this is what you need to realize in terms of what could potentially happen in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the Leafs are looking to improve in certain areas, it's going to cost you something if you're going to do it via trade.
Yeah.
So how far are you willing to go to get that next piece?
Right.
Now, Vatanen, really good defenseman.
Yeah.
There are levels above him, and mm-hmm. there are levels below him.
Yeah.
And this is the way trades work. You know, personally, I would hang up the phone if they said it's going to cost Nazem Kadri
right.
for Vatanen in some sort of deal. I would not have made that deal. Bozak, yes, I would have, even though what I just said is true, mm-hmm. that the depth would fall off significantly. I think you're making it up with a lot more depth on the back end. So you roll the dice that Matthews and Kadri stay healthy and...
But if
maybe
you
play Marlowe at center.
That's what I was going to say. There is some options to push
there
guys around your lineup, and then.
But I think honestly, like a guy like Connor Brown, that would not surprise me if they looked at him and said, "Okay, can we work a package that would include him?"
Yeah,
I would make that move. As much as I like Connor Brown, I would make the move if you believe this is a top two or top four defenseman under control right. for the next 2 years. But I think they love him. I think they love Connor
there's
Brown.
No reason
I think
not
they value
to love,
him incredibly high.
There's no reason not to love Connor Brown. And see, right now, they've got Cogliano. I'm just looking at Anaheim's roster. Cogliano's been playing the wing, where, you know, he is really a perfect third-line centerman, Cogliano. And the guy doesn't miss games. He's at 820 games or whatever it is straight. So, you know, if this maybe starts the ball rolling with other potential trades, I'm really keeping my eye out as far as who else could be available through the league, because you have to think that Edmonton would have been in on that trade. That Edmonton just doesn't have anybody to offer other than Nugent Hopkins, and they've got no depth of scoring right now. I wouldn't move Nugent Hopkins
now. Neither. No, me neither. Not for Vatanen. I don't.
And he's a really, like, Nugent Hopkins is a really good player. He's a detailed player. Like, if you don't watch Edmonton that much, I know he seems like he's got the build of the paper boy. He's
well,
kind of like
he doesn't
slight.
Seem like it. He does.
No, you're right. But he's gotten a little bit more man strength. But he's got a little bit more forcefulness on the puck now, and is really developed in a real two-way player. Ray's very familiar with him. But
well, we'll see him tonight.
Exactly.
Leafs Oilers on TSN4. We'll tee that up later in the hour. Bobby Mack will be in studio. Mm-hmm. Oh, we'll be back. It's a great time to be a Toronto sports fan. TFC off to their second straight MLS Cup, more than likely playing Seattle. Argos, Grey Cup champs. Raps are 13-7. Leafs are on fire. And if you're a sports fan in general, today was a big day. Tiger Woods back on the course.
Huge.
Back on the course. He looked good, chipping notwithstanding. Couple of chunks around the green, but looked good for the most part. 3 under par, first time in a long time he shot under par. And joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline is the Golf Channel's anchor and reporter, Todd Lewis, who is down there in the Bahamas. You're in the Bahamas, and you're willing to do radio interviews. What's wrong with you, Todd?
Well, actually, I just walked off the golf course, just walked into my hotel room, so I've got the night free, so why not talk about Tiger one more time?
Man, you guys must be talking about him a ton, but I think that's the right move. I mean, this to me is Tiger Woods' career and impact on the golf game. In a nutshell, that this is a tournament that if you're a golf fan, you're paying attention to. But the average sports fan in late November is not really tuned into golf. But I think everyone is today simply because Tiger returned. What do you make of it?
Well, I think him posting a 69 definitely has piqued a lot of interest. If he came out and shot 74, 5, 6, something like that, we're back into that same merry-go-round of him coming back from injury and not having it, and then we're losing interest because we've all seen this before. However, today, as I've seen all week, striping it off the tee, had a little bit of an issue more with accuracy today than he had in his practice rounds. But, I mean, he played with confidence. I mean, he didn't play like a guy who hasn't played competitively for more than 300 days. And I got to believe a little bit that Tiger had some nerves, which may surprise some people. But if you consider the fact that he's coming back from fusion surgery on his back, playing his first competitive event, and the fact that he has so many eyeballs on him and there was so much hype, that he did have nerves. And at the end of the day, I think he was pleasantly surprised. But he was tremendously invested from the moment he walked on the ground today to start his warm-up. He was fiery with his game and with his language at times. So, you know, I'm actually very, very surprised. I saw something around a 72 or 73, but for him to post a 60s number, it was quite impressive today.
So in Toronto, we talk a lot of hockey. Obviously, we talk a lot of sports, but if there's a big game or if there's a big storyline, we have a gentleman named the Quizmaster who is just, from a producer standpoint, who has just wound up that day. So you're starting today, the Golf Channel. Is that producer who's producing your shows just going nuts about Tiger Woods, and it's all Tiger every second, and you don't even care about Tommy Fleetwood or anybody else on the course?
Well, I mean, yes, to be honest with you, and I'm okay with that. Whether you like Tiger Woods or hate Tiger Woods, I think most of us all respect what he has done for golf. I mean, the guy urbanized golf. He made it cool in the cities. To play golf. He raised the level of the game to a different stratosphere. And there was a time, and outside of the President of the United States, he was the most recognizable person on the planet. And he's still kind of there. He's not too far from that. So, yeah, him coming back after a layoff for 300-plus days and posting a number in the 60s at the age of soon to be 42, while most of the golf is surrounded by kids in their early to mid-20s, yeah, I think it deserves all the attention today. Now, we'll see where he goes tomorrow and on the weekend. But, it was an exciting day for golf.
With Todd Lewis of the Golf Channel, he's down there in the Bahamas for the Hero Classic, Hero World Challenge. And Tiger Woods, again, playing today for the first time in about 300 days. He shot 3 under par, first time he's been in the 60s in a long time. And for the most part, his game looked really good. I was being called a hater earlier because I was pointing out the chip on 4. I think he chunked one on 15. I mean, that was the most difficult part of his meltdown in previous years to watch for me, was just seeing him spray it around the greens and, like, almost pull a Happy Gilmore and walk through the green over to the other side. I mean, that was the negative today for me, if we're willing to go there. I mean, what do you make of his short game, and how concerned would you be terms of where he's going to bring that in the future?
Short game is still, I think, a work in progress. However, I will tell you that the grasses around the greens here, if you're not completely sharp, you need to be sharp because it's the thin lies. Often if you miss these greens, you're not only trying to get the club underneath the ball with a thin lie, but you're also trying to hit it to a green that's elevated. So, you know, it's not easy, not only for Tiger, but for everyone in the field. But, you know, it's not his best right now, but that's okay. Tiger will admit he is not at 100% with his game. Tiger is here not to win. Tiger is here in the Bahamas to compete, to measure himself against an elite field. You've got 8 of the top 10 in the world. And try to get an assessment of where he is at a high level. And if he feels as if, on Sunday, first, that he plays 4 competitive rounds, walks all 4 rounds, and doesn't have any issues, that's the biggest check mark. Number 2, if he gets a top 10 finish here against a really strong field, I know it's a small field, but still a strong one, hey, that's a positive check mark, too. And he can also understand by putting his game into competitive motion here what he needs to work on, have a better understanding. I think that's it. This is an assessment tournament for him, and so far the first day, you know, I think he's very, very pleased.
Really appreciate you doing this, Todd. Enjoy it down there. I'm sure you will, and we'll bug you again down the road. Thanks, man.
My pleasure. Thank you.
There's Todd Lewis of the Golf Channel joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Check out the new 2018s and get rates starting at 0% plus receive 5,000 Aeroplan miles with every purchase. Go to MapleToyota.com. So Tiger's off and running. He survived. He got through 18 holes, 3 under par.
You think he's finishing the tournament? I hope so. But
I think he will. I feel like he's going to get through the tournament.
Even if he, I mean, if he explodes tomorrow and shoots a, what's 78?
The beauty of this tournament is everyone plays on the weekend. There's no cut. So even if he does that, whatever. You know, he won't be happy about it. It will be a story. But I think I would rank it biggest stories, biggest potential for Tiger stories to come out of the weekend.
Right.
He actually wins, number one. That will set people off to like, okay, he's back. He's going to win Augusta. He'll probably win three majors this year. He's going to pass Nicholas by 2019. You know, I think people would completely overreact. Number one, he wins. Number two, he gets injured.
Right.
And that's close. Like, win one, 1A, 1B is an injury.
Really?
Where he has to pull out because of his back or something like that. Because then you're like, here we go again. I knew he wasn't healthy. I'm never doing this again, even though we will.
Yeah.
And number three would be he just kind of melts down. His game looks ugly. But at least he's back and he survived.
Yeah, he finished.
That's a distant third, you know? And I was thinking about it today. I mean, we've had the luxury of sports fans of seeing legendary sports figures make comebacks.
Mm-hmm.
Like Lemieux did it a couple of different times.
Yeah.
Jordan did it a couple times. Tiger, though, it's been like 10 times.
Yeah,
like it's like on repeat. We keep seeing it and we goof on it to an extent, but then we get into the moment where he's playing and it feels like the first time he came back. I'm excited again.
But golf's a different sport. You can play it for a lifetime. That's the difference. Like Jordan coming back or, you know, Mary Lemieux. Darren Draeger tweeted out today that Jerome McGinley's not going to be ready to play in the upcoming, you know, Champions Cup
and Spengler Cup
and all. Well, he, like, that's a, not a comeback, but that's at 40 years old. Like, there's, the clock's ticking. Tiger's doing this at just over 40, and he could play on the seniors tour. Like, he could play in different scenarios the rest of his life. So that sport has a lot more longevity than some of the more, we'll call it physical sports.
Oh, for sure. Like the big four sports, absolutely.
Right. So you're not doing that. You're not making a comeback at 40-plus years old in the NFL.
No. No, you're not. There's no way. Like, really, no other sport can you do this.
I don't even think of if there's ever... I mean, Jagr was still playing. It's not... He came back to the NHL, but he was still playing in the K.
Consistently playing. Never shut it down.
And he didn't have this injury and all these
And it's also a little bit
issues.
Different because you can technically... hide a guy in team sports, individual sports, you know, to be fair to them, even though he can't play later, he's out on an island. Like Todd Lewis just said it. I can't imagine Tiger Woods has been nervous that many times throughout his career, but he probably was today. Hasn't played in 300 days, coming off a back fusion.
Yeah.
A lot of doubters. Another dark place in his life, getting clipped for DUI and the videos getting out there. He was being ridiculed. And he knows no one's tuning in to see Tommy Fleetwood hit off the first tee.
Although Tommy was brilliant today.
6 under for Tommy Boy. But everyone wants to know what Tiger's up to, and everyone was watching, and I'll be watching throughout the weekend.
Well, we all will. We'll be tracking it.
Yes, we will.
I don't watch a lot of golf, but I will track that.
You'll be in.
Just because of Tiger.
You'll be in. Yeah. Well, and I'd be curious to find out, like, you know, the ratings and stuff on that TFC match last night, because I had a bit of a marital battle. Because I haven't watched a ton of soccer throughout Aaron and I's relationship. But last night, you know it's a big game and you know you're invested when you're willing to be like, no, I'm not letting you put on
this
Grey's Anatomy or This Is Us.
Yeah,
I'm in. And we watched the whole match. And
she was fine with it or she...
Oh, she wasn't fine with it necessarily because she was making comments like, no goals, here we go, second game in a row, what's going on? But
guys laying on the field.
Yeah. I mean, in past years...
Did she have like a little old school West in her where she was pissed off when guys were down so much?
I don't know how much she was really paying attention.
So she'd walk into the kitchen, come back, see a guy laying on the field.
Maybe
like,
a comment.
Yeah, here we go.
Oh, there's Jovinko yelling at a ref again.
Yeah, he gets wound up.
He snaps all the time. Like that's like you would think he had learned his lesson. The guy got... He essentially got red carded because of his interactions with the refs.
Right.
Cost him a game.
Yes.
One of the biggest games of the season, the first leg against Columbus. You would think in his return he would smarten up. He doesn't have it in him.
No.
Like, I was nervous for him last night. I'm like, you're going to get carded up again.
He got
smart enough.
He got hit along the sidelines there, and he jumped right up
and started yelling at the ref.
Right at the ref.
I think he had a
case on that one, but still, you're right.
Learn your lesson. Even if you have a case, shut up.
Exactly.
All right, Bobby Mack and the O-Dog back in studio on the trade today. Matthews versus McDavid tonight. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Don't forget to set your PVRs on TSN 2. If you can't watch it live, you can watch it later. Find everything podcasted online, tsn1050.ca, and subscribe and check us out on iTunes. Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider, in studio. My understanding is you will be recording a Bobcast tomorrow?
Yep. Got to grind one out this week. Might not be as well prepared for that one as I'd like to be, but it's been a busy week. Yeah.
Okay. Those are always the best ones.
I'll wing it.
Yeah.
Seat of my pants.
Those are the best.
It's the way I used to run my life, but I'll go back to that.
More organized now?
Never hurts to just mail one in as well.
We'll be on a Friday.
Well, you could do that. I could say that every time I do it on a Friday.
Just take a bunch of tweets, like open up the mailbag and then...
Well, that's kind of what the whole thing is anyways.
Yeah, there you go. Like,
what's the craziest tweet that you get sent? Like on average?
I don't know. You know what? I don't... Honestly, it's hit and miss whether I even go to my mentions some days. So I don't know. It's funny because the vast majority of the stuff I get is generally positive. There's some negative and stuff, but I mean, it was interesting when Jordan Eberle brought up about the negativity, and he talked about the Edmonton media. But I think what he's also saying is we live in a society now where if you allow yourself, you can really get a lot of really negative energy sent your way.
Whoa.
And if you just keep on absorbing it, you can say it doesn't bother you, it doesn't bother you, it's not supposed to bother you, be a professional, you're making millions of dollars and everything else. But I think it really clouds people's judgment and how they feel about themselves and just everything. And a little bit from personal experience I say that, but not a lot. But I see a lot of younger people and what they see on social media that involves them creates a level of anxiety. And I'm like, you know, get off that stuff or shelter yourself from it as much as you can. So, as I say, I'm not afraid to look at my mentions. And I do like to go in there because most of the time it's generally positive. And a lot of times it's interesting. And sometimes you respond, sometimes I don't. But then you get some people who tweet at you and it's for requests to talk about this or talk about that. And as I say, I don't go in and see it. And then... some guy's ragging on me like for weeks, and I'm like, well, what's he mad about? Well, he one day asked me for an opinion on something, I didn't give it to him, and now he thinks that I don't want to talk to him, which I guess I don't. But
well, you can't talk to everyone. You've got 1.5 million followers. If everyone sent a note, you can't.
Exactly.
Like...
When I first started out on Twitter, I did have a lot of back and forth, and there are times you're on a plane and you do the Q&A thing with people and what have you, but it's really hit and miss. And what I've really found over the last, especially the last year or two, is it's just so busy. There's so much on the go, and we spread ourselves so thin that spending a significant period of time looking at your mentions on Twitter and responding or thinking about what you might say to somebody, you don't have the time for it. And that's not to say it's not important, but in the ranking of things, I guess it's not.
You're basically the living embodiment of the song Stan by Eminem. Are you familiar with Stan?
Yeah.
You're Eminem, and everyone on Twitter is Stan.
I saw the Saturday Night Live when Eminem did the new song, which I quite liked.
Pretty good.
On the record or the release, it's with Beyonce doing it, and I forget the young lady.
I don't remember her name.
I know her name, but I've forgotten it because I'm 61 years old and I forget things that.
She's pretty good, though, too.
She was very good on Saturday Night Live. And a lot of people didn't like that whole thing. And I thought it was really cool. I think it's a really haunting sort of song. It's cool. And then he did Stan, right? He kind of launched right into Stan there. Yeah.
It's like a 15-minute song, though. Like, Chance the Rapper is probably like, dude,
yeah,
I've got a couple more skits ready here. Can you stop?
Yeah, he did his MSG skit.
He was good afterwards.
That was pretty funny. Outstanding.
I was watching it live that night, and I was getting a bit of a kick out of that.
That was a good one.
Is that when he was the sideline?
Yeah. Brady Shea was like...
The guy's name spelled S-K. Shea's name was spelled like S-K.
S-K-J-E-I.
There's an S, a K, a J. No.
We're not doing this.
Yeah, we're not doing this.
Not happening.
Let's do that hockey thing.
Let's do that hockey. You should talk about that offense.
Yeah.
Leafs Oilers on TSN 4 tonight. I mean, I'm biased, but I think Matthews versus McDavid is my most anticipated one-on-one matchup. How would that... I know you're not big on rankings, but is it high on your list?
I don't do rankings. it's fun. And you know what? It's funny because I took a lot of grief. At the beginning of the year, I made the point, and I think I was doing my interview with Peter Chiarelli at the Penticton rookie tournament, so it's before the preseason even started. And I made mention of to him something that I had observed anecdotally was that because of McDavid and Edmonton doing as well as they did last year, and because Austin Matthews did so well and the Leafs finally got in the playoffs, I talked about the level of optimism in both cities and how I get the feeling that there's a sense amongst Oiler fans and amongst Leaf fans that at some point in time in the relative near future, these two players and these two organizations are on a collision course, and wouldn't an all-Canadian Stanley Cup final featuring the resurgent Edmonton Oilers and the resurgent Toronto Maple Leafs led by Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews be really something fantastic? And I got the usual feedback from, speaking of my Twitter, reading my Twitter, I shouldn't have read it that week, a lot of Edmonton fans, oh, it's always about Toronto. It wasn't about Toronto at all. It's just simply that both of them were in a similar mind space coming off of last season because of the success, the relative success that they had. And here we are, and the Leafs are doing well. Matthews is not exactly on a hot streak, but he hasn't been terrible, and he had a little bit of an injury there. McDavid hasn't put up the numbers we thought he was going to put up, but he's been awfully sick. And on the list of things wrong with the Edmonton Oilers, Connor McDavid's name doesn't even show up on the list. They have so many other problems that they've had to deal with this year. And as such, it makes the game even that much more intriguing because I have no idea what's going to happen here. This is not an Edmonton Oilers team at its zenith right now with McDavid firing on all cylinders. And this is a good Leaf team that's played quite well but has relied heavily on their goaltender. And Austin Matthews hasn't been right at the top or the zenith of his game.
Well, you mentioned Twitter, and we were talking about the Sammy Vatanen for Adam Henrique trade, Devils and Ducks making that deal earlier. And naturally, my Twitter account, Leaf fans, start chiming in. Why didn't the Leafs make that happen?
They probably would have wanted Kadri.
Well, and that you shut the phone down immediately, as far as I'm concerned. But I would think your Twitter account was blown up with Leaf fans, but also Oilers fans who were like, where's Chiarelli on this? We need better defense. Sammy Vatanen's a good player. I mean, were you surprised that this deal went down between these two teams and a team like Edmonton wasn't involved, or Toronto for that matter?
Not really, and I'm sure I couldn't imagine that the Leafs wouldn't have inquired of Sammy Vatanen. And I remember last year there was interest when Toronto was talking to Anaheim about all those defensemen. But I mean, everybody was talking to Anaheim about all those defensemen. What became clear to everybody very early on in this process is that the Anaheim Ducks were not trading Cam Fowler or Hampus Lindholm or Josh Manson or Brandon Montour. Those four guys were off the table. And what became fairly clear is, once healthy, Sammy Vatanen was the guy that they were most willing to part with. But he was also the guy that potentially might be the least impactful and more one-dimensional of those other guys. He's mostly a power play guy. That's his stock in trade, although he is a puck mover and he can skate. But he's very, very good on the power play. They needed a forward, and they've needed a forward even before Getzlaff got hurt, and they knew Kessler was going to be out anyways. They've been looking for a forward since last season. And in the offseason, they went to great lengths to try and get Matt Duchene, and we're still trying to do that right up until the time the three-way deal with Colorado, Nashville, and Ottawa went down. New Jersey, once Travis Zajac came back and played a game in the last week or two here after surgery in the offseason, it kind of put, because of the arrival of the kids, Jesper Bratt, Nico Hischier, Pavel Zacha, and others, Adam Henrique kind of became, he's a top six forward that kind of fell outside their top six. So it was the perfect matchup for two teams that wanted to try and make something happen. I'm sure the Leafs had interest in that, and I'd be shocked if they didn't. But I'm going to guess that it wouldn't have been so much Kadri was looking for, but I'll bet Bob Murray would be saying Connor Brown, you know, one of those guys.
Well, we were talking about that earlier, like the limitations on where the Leafs are willing to go to make a deal. And, you know, Sammy Vatten's a good defenseman, but there are defensemen that are better. There are defensemen that are worse.
Mm-hmm.
And how you value, I mean, Matthews is off the table. If you're talking a guy like Nylander or Marner, you're talking a lot bigger than Sammy Vatten, with all due respect. But if I'm not, I wouldn't be surprised if they looked at it and said, you know what, Connor Brown is too valuable. He is too valuable. We believe he's got a real future, and when Van Riemsdyk moves on and Komarov moves on, his value is only going to improve. Now,
but sooner or later, if they want to get one of those guys, you're seeing the quality of forwards that are leaving. If you really want to, if they're going to make a trade for one of them, somebody with quality, and Shiro said it today, he's like, to get a good defenseman, you got to trade a good player. End of story.
Mm-hmm. Well, look at what Ray Shiro has managed to pull off in his short time here in New Jersey. Someone sent this to me earlier. It's like crazy what this guy's done. He's moved out Adam Henrique, Adam Larson, Joseph Blandisi, 2 second-round picks, 2 third-round picks, in exchange for Taylor Hall, Sammy Vatten, and Kyle Palmieri and Marcus Johansson. That's pretty good deals.
That's good work.
Yeah, you know? what he did was you look for, we call them market inefficiencies or inequities, because there's the Washington Capitals, and they've got a major salary cap issue. They want to re-sign TJ Oshie in the offseason. They want to do a lot of things, and they're hamstrung to do it. And they basically have to give away a real good, you know, top nine forward in Marcus Johansson.
Yep.
So New Jersey gets in there and says, here you go. That's an important guy. Because I think when Ray Shiro went into New Jersey, the first thing he realized, they didn't have a deep reserve list. They didn't have a lot of depth, and that they had to find a way to manufacture legitimate National Hockey League players quickly, and having the first overall pick in the draft helps you do that. I mean, Jesper Bratt is found money, because the Devils would be the first to tell you they did not anticipate.
Isn't he like a sixth round or two?
Sixth round pick from 2 years ago. Who, if you just even were to twist, never mind twist Ray Shiro's arm, just twist his pinky finger a little, he'd say, "Yeah, we probably thought he was going to be in London this year playing in the OHL."
Mm-hmm.
But he came in and he's been full value. A little ups and downs, but a lot of kids are like that. So he shears as advertised. And the Butcher thing, I mean, you go out and you sell yourself and your organization. And in this case, they appealed to Will Butcher's sense of, hey, our blue line really has an opportunity.
Sometimes being bad is not
a
bad thing for recruiting.
And it's funny. And again, it's early in the season, but again, I've said this in the salary cap world, and it sometimes happens, and we'll have to wait and see whether it happens for the full season or not, but the ability in a salary cap world to get real good real fast or real bad real fast is really kind of epic, mm-hmm. I find.
Mm-hmm.
That there's some teams, and suddenly you wake up and you go, whoa, where did they come from? And for a lot of people, that's this edition of the New Jersey Devils. And then there's other teams where you're like, you know, whoa, and a couple of weeks ago you might have said it about the Washington Capitals, but they've been winning a lot lately.
I've broken it down, Bob, to like, I think it's 3 or 4 transactions. If you can have 3 or 4 really good ones, you can turn it around. Like Montreal a couple of years ago went from worst to first in the East just after some simple transactions. And you can go the other way, too. You get 3 or 4 bad ones, you could be just in the dumper.
Well, and it does feel like Jersey, the Leafs, I mean, a couple of different teams. Now, it doesn't always work. Arizona's been doing this. Buffalo's been doing this.
Yeah.
But you load off for a few years, get as many picks as you can, draft as high as you can, and then you hope in 2 or 3 years you can take advantage of a couple bloated teams and acquire some pieces.
And you talk about it all the time. If you're an owner, for the team that turns it around, and if you're the owner of Arizona or just some tire fire that's just always brutal, you're going up to your general manager saying, look at all these teams that have turned it around, and what are you doing?
Yeah. But here's the thing, too, is if you're an owner and you look around at all these teams, how did these guys get so good? I mean, they had to be bad for a long time, a lot of these teams.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you look at the good teams, the really good teams, the teams that have won the Cups, and I'll almost guarantee you whether it's Pittsburgh or Chicago.
LA was kind of in a wasteland for a bit. That
you go through a lot of these teams, and you can find 5 to 10 years of pure, unadulterated misery. Mm-hmm. And even then, you gotta be lucky. I mean, the Chicago Blackhawks got Patrick Kane because they won the lottery. They were supposed to pick like fourth or fifth or sixth that year. I forget what it was, and they bumped right up. They bumped right up to number one. And I mean, even as good as the Leafs are right now, and they're quite a good team. Imagine if they don't get Austin Matthews. Oh, imagine if the Edmonton Oilers don't get Connor McDavid.
Totally different spots.
Agreed.
What if Jack Eichel's in Edmonton right now instead of Connor McDavid? Not to take anything away from Jack Eichel, because I think he's going to be a real good player. But you know, just that margin is crazy. So for you get a team like the Detroit Red Wings, who've been consistently competitive. We talk about the record that came to an end last year when they missed the playoffs. But I mean, every other team, when you look at the Red Wings, the success they had in the 1990s and early 2000s, every other team of their generation when they were winning cups, that won cups with them, went into the tank for a long time and then got good again or haven't even gotten good again yet. Mm-hmm. New Jersey, we're still waiting for Jersey, and they may have arrived now, or they're on their way, maybe. We'll see.
Well, there was a tweet circulating this past week looking at the standings at the end of the season 3 years ago, I guess, going into the McDavid draft. And it was Buffalo last, Arizona second last, Edmonton third last, Toronto fourth last. And as of today, it's Buffalo dead last, Arizona second dead last, Edmonton tied for third last. The only team of those four, 3 years later, that's moved up is Toronto. The other three are still in the basement. Yeah. Now, Edmonton's a shock, but no one's shocked. Buffalo and Arizona are still brutal.
I thought they'd be better. You think they were going to be this bad?
See, last year they missed Eichel for a significant period of time. They missed some quality games from Evander Kane, and they still ended up within shouting distance of the playoffs. And right now they're not on course to even come close to equaling that.
So I'm pretty sure that they would have thought going in that they would take the next step.
I thought they'd be better this year, but
it's more poisonous than that, though.
Like, no, dead last in the league.
No,
I'm with you.
That.
Leonard is not great, but he's not.
Just hasn't turned a corner as a starter that you're hoping he would have.
For sure. All right, Bob.
By the way, thank you to Mike Cohen on Twitter, who tells me that it was Skylar Grey who sang with Eminem.
I saw that. Skylar Grey.
On the SNL.
Are you a Neil Young fan?
Very much so.
I'm looking forward to tomorrow night. Once in a lifetime, live stream concert event from a location somewhere in Canada tomorrow night, December 1st at 8 p.m. The location of the concert still unknown. But we have you covered. You can stream it online at ctv.ca. Check it out on the CTV Go app or iHeartRadio.ca. Neil Young, streaming online exclusively tomorrow night, somewhere in Canada.
Nice.
Could be a great concert. We're looking forward to it. All right, Bob, we'll catch you on the panel tonight.
Thanks, guys.
Here's Bob McKenzie, your hockey insider, mixing in a Neil Young read. I'm looking forward to that tomorrow.
Are you a Neil Young fan?
I love Neil Young. Uncle Neil, can't go wrong.
Hit and miss.
He's got a heart of gold.
I'm hit and miss.
All right.
He's got a heart of gold.
He does. Great voice.
All right, Leafs back in action tonight. We'll tee it up. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine Overdrive. Continues TSN 1050 and on the TSN Go app. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Under the number, Montreal-Detroit. I'm on Minnesota. They're going to respond for their head coach, Bruce Boudreau. They got Vegas tonight, though, man. Vegas, the biggest surprise in the NHL. But I'll take Minnesota at home, and I'm going to ride the Maple Leafs tonight.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm taking the Leafs.
I just got this weird feeling that McJesus might go McCrazy.
He didn't play that well against the Maple Leafs last year. Like, in the two games they played, Kadri outperformed them the first game. Remember, Kadri scored the OT winner. The second game, I don't really remember how he played, but Toronto won.
Yeah,
so, you know, he's due. He's due to absolutely light a game on fire.
I just think one of them could go nuts, McDavid or Matthews, and start their season because it's kind of been mediocre for the both of them. No goals last five games. Someone's going to fire it up tonight. Tune into TSN.
You're calling a high-scoring game?
And listen to the tap man or no?
No guy.
No guy.
It's a strong no guy.
It's a no guy.
Catch it on TSN 4. Exclusively on TSN 4 tonight.
On the panel.
Throw down 20 and you can score 81. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. So, listen, man, I think people in Toronto are feeling pretty good. TFC off to the MLS Final, MLS Cup, next Saturday down at BMO Field. We believe Altidore will be playing. Jovinko will be playing.
He'll be playing.
Michael Bradley will be playing. They're going to be looking for redemption if they play Seattle. It doesn't really matter. It feels like they will. Argos won the Grey Cup. Raps are 13-7.
Larry Tannenbaum, loving life.
Larry Tannenbaum's bar play in the city right now is probably pretty good, you would think.
The month of November was strong for the city of Toronto.
Yes. And tomorrow we embark on a new month.
See how it goes.
Will we come crashing back down to earth?
Some mustaches get shaved tomorrow as well. December 1. November is over.
Yep.
Jay and Dan. Their stashes are epic. They've got great mustaches.
Jay can grow a stash, and so could Dan.
Oh, Dan's got a pretty... Well, Jay was mentioning the other day that, like, Dan's got the kind of salt and pepper hair, and then his mustache is like jet brown.
Yeah, it's full brown. There's no gray.
There isn't even a speck of gray in there.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful contrast.
It is. Looks good.
It looks very good. All right, so the O-Dog is calling just one of the two best players dominating tonight. Noodles, I feel like you're leaning towards this Boisson character going Ken Dryden tonight.
I'm not. I'm just. Don't take this guy lightly.
Okay.
Like, that's what I'm concerned about. And that's Freddie fine. Anderson has been so strong lately. We could see a bit of a goalie duel, or we could see a 7-6 game. You never know.
I hope so. I'm looking forward to it. Enjoy the game tonight. Enjoy your evenings. We're out of here. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m.
We're going to chat then.